set the controls for the Heart of Geekness. We talk with Morgan Spurlock about Comic-Con Episode 4 of Fans Hope on this episode of Mighty Movie Podcast.
I'll never forget the first time I took a peek next to a stormtrooper and a Klingon. That could only happen at Comic-Con.
Okay, we're good.
All right, guys.
I was looking out my hotel room window and I saw three Ninja Turtles really impatiently checking their watches.
Excuse me, you have to check that in.
In the mind of every comic book fiend, Comic-Con is just the answer to all your prayers. It's like heaven, in as much as, like they always tell you, when you go to heaven, everything you've ever lost is going to come back to you.
I want to get in already.
My wife's not too ecstatic about this whole toy collecting thing.
Let's go.
But I will not leave that con unless I have those figures.
That's Paul!
Comic-Con is a job fair for comic book industry.
It's just a jump into the fire, as Duran Duran would say.
I read comics every day as a kid, and I really, really want to do this so badly.
Entry 11!
Comic-Con is a great place for exposure. And it's a big chance for me to get myself out there. It's about getting all your friends together and going on a suicide mission. And that's what this is. It's a suicide mission for my future.
I am Krogan!
I'm practically vibrating right now. I feel like I'm the Flash and I can just move through solid objects.
If I could go back in time and tell, like, the 11-year-old me, like, one day not only do you go to Comic-Con, you go to Comic-Con every year, so much so that, like, you get greeted by Stan Lee when you show up. Yeah. You know, and the 11-year-old me would be like, how did we get so fat?
And if you didn't recognize that voice, you are not true geek. That's Kevin Smith, by the way. Welcome to MMP. I'm Dan Persons. Comic-Con Episode 4 of Fans Hope is a crappy title for quite a good documentary. In 2010, filmmaker Morgan Spurlock, he of Super Size Me, who here has teamed up with the legendary Stan Lee and Buffy creator Joss Whedon and has brought in Ain't It Cool's Harry Knowles as a co-producer, rallied a large production force to capture the stories of a small but representative selection of attendees to the Super Bowl of comic conventions, the San Diego Comic-Con. In the tales of, among others, a couple of fledgling artists seeking to go pro, an old-school comics dealer watching as the focus of the con is increasingly commandeered by film and television, a costumer hoping to make her mark during the masquerade, and a geek couple seeking to cement their relationship with a blessing from, yes, Kevin Smith himself, Spurlock manages to cut through the cliché and get to the souls of these fans, pros, and semi-pros. As a geek myself, I can say it's a heartening experience. So I sat down with Morgan to talk about the film, and here's how it went. Very good film.
Thank you.
Felt like communion for me, yeah. Which is a good thing.
Yeah, give me both.
I have to say I was not in love, and I'm not in love with the title. Have you been hearing that at all?
No, I think there were people who weren't in love with the title who, once they saw the film, fell much more in love with the title. I think they didn't love it until they saw the film, and then they get it. Mm-hmm. They get the homage to fandom for what the film represents, and also the fact that the movie is a fan's hope. It is, the film is about hope for all the people that are there. You know, what I love about the movie is how it humanizes all the characters that are in the film. Like, everybody that's in the film becomes real, you know, whereas I think other films that have dealt kind of with cons in the past or whatever it may be, people in costumes, collectors, they come off much more as caricatures. And I think that over this film, you're rooting for them. You start to feel for them. You feel for their passions, their hopes. And that's why I think that, you know, a fan's hope really works. Mm-hmm.
There's some disagreement about terminology in the film, but I'll ask the question this way. Are you geek?
I'm a geek. I'm completely a geek. Although I think I had a very nerdy side and I had a very geeky side, but now I feel like nerds and geeks have combined into one kind of a gurn or a neek, whatever, or a gerd, whatever it may be.
Not a gerd.
Maybe it's a neek. Maybe I'm more of a neek, but I feel like that is all unified into one thing now. And no, I mean, I grew up very much a geek, you know, playing with like my Star Wars action figures and reading comic books and playing video games and you know, not having a girlfriend until I was, you know, much into my late teens. Yeah.
So how did you get involved with this?
I got involved, you know, from the very beginning. It started off as I'd never been to Comic-Con. You know, I'd always wanted to go. I'd been to other cons, you know, in New York and in my home state of West Virginia and, you know, other places along the way over the years. But I'd always wanted to go to San Diego. And for various other reasons, you know, you never could work out. And then I got called in 2009 to do the Simpsons 20th anniversary special for Fox. And as soon as I got that phone call, I was like, yes, we're going to Comic-Con. I was like, we're going to Comic-Con. We're going to go there. We're going to find Simpsons super fans because I know they're there. And so we set up kind of this American Idol-esque casting to have people come in and kind of profess their love for all things Homer. And while we were doing this, I was like, these people were coming in like these crazy costumes. This guy came in dressed as Carnage and had like his whole body painted in like red liquid latex, and he told the story about how his wife dropped him off that day and she doesn't really get it. And I'm just like, this place is a movie. Like, it really, this is a story, because there's so much passion, there's so much devotion at Comic-Con. And later that night I met Stan Lee for the first time. And you know, this is a guy who, as a kid growing up in West Virginia, changed my life. You know, I was reading his comics as a child, and it was his comics and a lot of his stories, I think, really gave me the courage to want to tell my own stories, to want to be a creative person. And so I just went over and told him that, and you know, told him how important, you know, he was to me. And he's like, "Oh my God, Morgan, thank you. It's like, wow, it's great to meet you. You know, we should make a movie together. You know, we should make a documentary. We should make a documentary about Comic-Con." And I was like, "That's a great idea, Mr. Lee. Thank you so much." And I turned around, and as I turned around, Peter Michelli, an agent from CAA, who's a giant of a man, he's a 6'6" tall. He said, "So, how was it meeting Stan?" I was like, "It was great. We want to make a movie about Comic-Con." And he's like, "That's a great idea. You should meet my other client who's coming into town tomorrow." So cut to tomorrow is I was meeting his other client, who is Joss Whedon. So I'm at breakfast with Joss Whedon. And by that point, my producing partner, Jeremy Chilnick, and I, who, you know, we were there working on the Simpsons special, kind of flushed out over the course of the night, what would a movie like Comic-Con be? What would we do? Who would we follow? What would the storylines be? So when we sat down with Josh, we kind of had it beat it out a little bit more about, you know, a comic book vendor, you know, an artist who's trying to break into the business, you know, all these different kind of storylines, a cosplayer. And Josh is like, "I love it." He goes, "I love it." He goes, "I'm in." And so there, in a period of 2 days, you know, we had both Stan and Joss coming on board to kind of executive produce this movie about Comic-Con, and it worked, which is amazing. And we were able to pull it off. I don't think the movie would have been made if I had gone to Comic-Con by myself and said, "I want to make a movie about Comic-Con." I think they'd have been absolutely not. Mm-hmm. For decades, people have tried to make a movie about it. And I think the reason that they had the confidence to move forward with me was because of Joss and Stan and ultimately, you know, Thomas Tull and Harry Knowles. I mean, we had this little geek dream team that I think instilled confidence in them.
While you're on that subject, I mean, I counted in the credits for 12 field producers.
Yes.
Were there as many units on the floor? Was that what you were wrangling?
We had 15 field units. So there were 15 full crews that were shooting at any given moment. And then each one of those crews had the ability for a producer or a second camera person to even peel off and shoot another camera. So there were anywhere between 15 to 28 cameras that were shooting at any given time. You know, to cover something like that, you need a lot of bodies. And, you know, we were following 10 characters, so we were telling all of their stories. And then plus, you know, just you want to have the ancillary cameras to shoot everything else. So it was massive. We had a crew of 150 people working on the film. We shot about 650 hours over the course of, and the other thing is the whole thing was shot during Comic-Con. You know, we started with our characters at home, so we followed our characters in, and then we followed them back home afterwards. So the whole movie was shot in a period of about 8 days, seven, 8 days.
Is this the largest production you've done?
Ever. Yeah, the largest production I've ever done. Massive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where were you in this? Were you on the floor? Were you with the crew?
I was all over. Like, I was bouncing from crew to crew. I mean, that's why we had, you know, field crews. And within those field crews, we had really talented directors in their own right. You know, like Mark Landsman, who directed Thunder Soul, was with one of the crews. Keith Davidson, who directed, you know, Devil's Minor and Akeem the Dream. You know, Josh Weinstein. You know, they were just amazing, great filmmakers that were like, that I basically called up and said, what are you doing, you know, for the next, you know, 2 weeks? You want to come work on this movie? And they were like, sure, I'll come do that. It's like, it's a week and a half, 2 weeks. I'm in. Ross Kaufman, who won the Academy Award for Born into Brothels. You know, we had great people who were like, listen, if it's only a week, week and a half, done, I'm in. And it was intense, and we were working like 16, 18, 20-hour days. Sometimes, you know, like, they were nice. I would get 3 hours sleep, and we'd be right back up again. But it was, you were running on such adrenaline. It was so exciting. Yeah.
Was there anything you did that did not make the cut? Any stories that are going to be in an extended edition or...
Yeah, there were some people that we followed. And again, we haven't gone in and recut their story. So they won't be on the first DVD, probably on an extended DVD. Because we've already had to deliver the first batch of material for the first DVD that's going to come out. But we followed a couple out of Colombia. And it was a husband and a guy and his girlfriend. Or were they husband and wife? I think they were married, actually. It was a husband and wife who they created a comic book company. It was his passion to start a comic book company. And it was the first comic book they published was like a folk story about this slave who basically had risen up against it and was basically now righting the wrongs of all the people who were like oppressing, you know, the underclass in the country and in the society. And so they published this comic that had started to get a little following in Colombia, but they'd mortgaged their house. They took out a second mortgage on the house. They borrowed money from his mom, you know, to basically get this thing published. And they're like, if we really want this thing to be a success, this company to be a success, we've got to go to America. We've got to go to Comic-Con and find a company that can help partner with us to get this really out into the Latino market. Like, we've got to really blow this out. And so they were getting ready to come. Her visa came and then his didn't. And so the guy who's basically was the heart and soul of this business had to stay in Colombia. And so she flew over. And so we're following her as she's trying to like get meetings happening and trying to build up interest in her in the comic. And it's just not her passion. It's not her thing. So as she's Skyping with him every night, trying to get advice, what do I do? And it's heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking to watch. And as we tried to cut it into the film, we're just like, it just didn't work. You know, the story didn't work because... you know, her journey, she's not really chasing anything. It was very kind of, she was very much wandering through trying to figure it out, and it was just too hard. So that, hopefully we'll have that story on the DVD.
So going back to the Simpsons thing, I mean, did finding the super fans, was that at all training for finding the people whose stories you told here?
Oh, well, we did a much better job casting this film than I think we were able to find at Comic-Con. You know, we had a very different casting process, you know, with this film, you know, we went through comic book shops. We kind of put together our call to action, and we went through comic book shops. We went through fan sites. Harry Knowles was a producer, and so we basically blasted out through Ain't It Cool News. And then we just got a deluge of interest, you know, people sending emails, videos, photos. Probably about 2,000 people that submitted, said, we want to be in the film. Follow me. Tell my story. Of which, you know, half of those 1,000 were probably people like, yeah, here's my story. And you're like, oh, that's an interesting story. And they're like, yeah, just get me a ticket and I'll come. And I'm like, one, it's not our job. We're not buying you a plane ticket. We're not getting you a pass to Comic-Con. You know, we want to tell the story of people who are already coming. And so then from there, you start to whittle it down. And who are the people that are really going on a real kind of journey? You know, that are really committed to, so they're not like, yeah, I can't wait to go and, you know, hang out. It's going to be fun. Not a good story. But somebody like, you know, Skip and Eric, who are like, I want to break into this business. I want to come show my portfolio. I want to know if I have what it takes to make it. That's an amazing story. Holly Conrad, who had competed in the Masquerade 2 years earlier. This is her third time. You're only allowed to compete in the Masquerade 3 times. Then after that, you're considered a professional. So this is it. This is my last chance to really prove myself, to try and break into this business. That's an amazing story. That's a real journey. Chuck, you know, here's, you know, Chuck Rosansky, who's, you know, I'm seeing less and less people buy comics. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do. If I don't go to Comic-Con and make a certain amount of money, I don't know what's going to happen with my business. You know, there's real stakes. Even somebody like Anthony Calderon, who, you know, here I am in my room of doom filled with toys. My wife doesn't really get the collecting, but I've got to get that 18-inch Galactus. If I don't get Galactus, I'm not leaving that place without it. You know, there's, for me, it was, I really wanted to tell the big overarching story of this place through these people's passions. And I think that really comes out.
You know, and I think one of the stories you left out is the one that sort of stood out for me, which is they're not just the most adorable couple at the con. They're not just the most adorable couple in fandom. I think they're the most adorable couple ever.
Yeah.
How did you find that, and did you expect the story to quite work out the way it did?
Well, one of the in our casting list of people that we were trying to find around the world, you know, there's a lot of geek love. You know, there's people who fell in love and met because of, you know, their mutual adoration of whatever it may be, video games or certain movie or whatever it is. And so here was James Darling and Sae Young. So we were trying to find a couple that had fallen in love because of Comic-Con. And so we got a video from James Darling and Sae Young, who they send in their video and they tell the story about how a year ago, James walked into a coffee shop in Santa Barbara where they, you know, were finishing school, and he sees this really cute girl who's there looking at her Comic-Con catalog that she'd just gotten, and he's walking in with his Comic-Con catalog, and he's like, I'm going to Comic-Con. You're going to Comic-Con? So they sit down, they start talking about all the things they love about Comic-Con. I love Kevin Smith. You love Kevin Smith? Oh my gosh. Oh, well, you love this? And so they bonded over Comic-Con. They went to Comic-Con together that year. They fell in love. They ended up started dating. They moved in. Now they're boyfriend and girlfriend, and now, you know, so here they are, they're in love, they love all the same geeky things, and then cut to his video that he sent to us, and he's in another room holding the video next to his face, and he goes, but what I really want to do is I want to propose to Sae Young at Comic-Con this year. And the minute I watched that video, I was like, we're putting them in the movie. It's fantastic. And they're adorable. They're so lovable. They're so geeky and fantastic. And she literally won't leave him alone. Like every time he tries to get away to get the wedding ring, to get the engagement ring, she just will follow him everywhere. So he has no time to himself to even deal with that. And and you're watching this story play out, and it's amazing to see. And even when they're at the Kevin Smith panel, where again, he did it all on his own. He got in touch with Kevin Smith's people, who asked Kevin, you know, can I ask my wife to marry, or my girlfriend to marry me at your panel? And they arranged it so he would be the very first question at the panel, which was amazing. She comes running over to him. Because he's hiding back in the line at this point. She comes running over and she's like, if someone asks your question, you know, I've got a follow-up question. And I'm listening at the back of the room with headphones on, you know, it's because they're both mic'd. And so I'm in the back of the room listening. And she goes, if somebody asks your question, ask him if he'll marry me. And I'm just sitting in the back of the room going, oh my God, this is not happening. I can't even believe this. You know, I'm trying just not to be seen. And I'm like dying. I'm laughing so much. And when the whole thing plays out, like I've seen that scene 80, 90 times by this point, and it is still so moving and so beautiful, and I well up when I watch it. I mean, it's fantastic. There's moments in this film that are so special that I just, there's moments like that when they happen, and you're like, God, we got so lucky. Yeah.
Gotta ask you, this past Comic-Con in New York, I had brought a little camcorder with me. I did some video that we put up on CineFantastic website. And I mean, I was just with this little handheld thing, and I was doing a thing where I was trying to demonstrate what the crowds are like. And so I was moving through with this, and I got people cursing at me because of that.
Yeah.
What was the situation with the crowds and the equipment in your case?
I mean, there's always some people who are upset. We shot with very small cameras. Like, we weren't shooting. We shot with a couple large cameras, you know, some true HD cameras. But most of the stuff we shot with, like, EX3s and EX1s. So it is still, you know, high-resolution HD, but they're much more manageable within that crowd, you know, than, like, a true giant HD cam. But, you know, most people were really generous. You know, most people knew we were there making a film because it had already been announced. You know, we'd already talked about it. They knew we were casting, so they didn't know who we were following, so we didn't announce that, but they knew we were making a movie. And most people were really cool about it. You know, of course, there's a few people who are like, you know, fuck your movie. You know, I'm like, hey, all you're doing is causing a traffic jam, asshole. You know, but the traffic jam would be here anyway as you're walking around. It's like, it's not me and a camera that's causing us not being able to walk right now. It's the other, you know, 100,000 people that are in this aisle right now. So, but on a whole, you know, it's like, you got to think 1% of the people may have been upset about us, you know, being there shooting, or anybody being there shooting. But it, you know, it was an overwhelmingly positive experience, you know, for everybody. You know, people were excited about it, and it was consistent. People would come up and they'd say to me, they'd come up and they'd be like, just make us look good, all right? You know, like this, there was that real concern about, you know, just don't make us look stupid, please, just make us look good.
So 15 crews, how much footage, or actually footage is completely the wrong term nowadays. Yeah. How many terabytes?
It was 650 hours, which is, what does that break down into terabytes? What is it, is it 20 hours a terabyte?
Yeah,
is that what we get?
Yeah,
I think it's about 20 hours a terabyte.
Like that,
so
yeah.
I think if it's 20 hours a terabyte, so that's 5 times 6, it's 30, it's like 32 terabytes, somewhere in there, yeah.
So how do you even begin to cut that down?
Yeah, it's we had two amazing editors and an amazing assistant editorial staff. You know that Tova Goodman and Tim Smith were the editors of this film. You know, we started breaking out footage. First, you break it out by characters, and so when we started editing it together, we edited each character's story together first as one kind of just one movie. Here's like their story as a film. So here's James Darling to say Young's. Here's Holly's. Here's Skip's. Here's Eric's. Here's Chuck's. Here's Anthony's. And then you break out all the psychs. So here's all of our funny psych interviews with our famous characters, you know, whether it's famous people, actors, directors, you know, comic book creators, animators, artists, whatever. Those people are all here. Here's all of our fans. Here's all of our fans who aren't in costume. Here's all of our fans who are in costume. Here's all the smart things they say. And we break those out. And then you dish out all the B-roll, morning, night, transitional, da-da-da, and all these things. And then you start just putting the puzzle together, figuring out how it works. What are the key moments in each of these people's stories? And as you start weaving those together, you hope you start to kind of see a thread, a story thread that, you know, will make the most sense of where you can jump from next person to next person. And it takes time. Like, you know, we edited this whole film we started in the fall into the spring. The whole editorial process was probably about 9-10 months, you know, of post. And then finishing the film, which is a couple months longer. So all in probably, you know, just over a year of, you know, editorial and finishing. But great editors will always save the day, you know, and both Tova and Tim, you know, were brilliant at just having a real sense of story and structure and the emotion. I mean, that's what I love about this film, is there's real emotion that comes out of the movie, which is also really beautiful.
Were there any particular psych films that were in a special get for you?
Oh, like some of the psych interviews?
Yeah.
Oh, like there's people that are just genius that you love, like Eli Roth and Kevin Smith. Like their interviews are just brilliant. And, you know, of course, Joss and Stan, who are, you know, were producers of the film, so they don't really count because they're, you know, I was able to hedge them in a little easier. Like Kenneth Branagh's interview was amazing. Like I loved his interview. I loved Seth Green. Like this is very much his world. You know, he met his wife at Comic-Con, so it's like this is something he's very passionate about. And there's some people that, you know, like Jerry Robinson, who we interviewed, who didn't make the final cut, and he just passed away, you know, the creator of The Joker. I love Robert Kirkman. I love, you know, Matt Fraction. I love Olivia Wilde. Like, there's people that are in this film that I just really loved that we interviewed. Seth Rogen's interview was fantastically funny, like the stories that he told about being at Comic-Con, because he's a big collector. He collects a lot of vinyl toys. And so, and Guillermo del Toro, who I loved Guillermo del Toro before this film, and we spent like an afternoon following him around, and he's so gracious with fans, and he's so good to the people that he talks to, and he'll answer any question. And like, I just, after that day with him, I was like, you are on such an even bigger level than I could imagine.
He's a sweetheart. I've interviewed.
He's such a sweetheart. So passionate. Yeah.
One more question. You've got two audiences coming to this. You've got the geek audience. You've got the I hate the word, but mundanes, shall
yeah.
we say,
yeah.
going to it. Now, I guess you need really to play more to the mundanes than to the geeks. But how do you decide the balance, and how do you keep the balance?
Well, for me, I think that it was important to tell, really just to tell the best story. And if you tell the best story, it will hopefully cater to both sides. It'll cater to the non-indoctrinated as well as the indoctrinated, the fans and the non-fans. Because when I look at this film, I look at this as a movie that isn't just for geeks. This is a movie because the geeks don't need to be reminded how awesome it is and how great these things are. But the people who don't really consider themselves geeks or are geeks but don't really talk about it, or, you know, the people who have their, you know, their own Wookiee mask at home or their lightsaber and they don't really want to know that they have Hobbit feet or Spock ears, whatever it may be, you know, I think that those are the people that will have the ability now to, like, expand it to a greater audience. Like, I think those are the people that you want to have really come in and champion the movie and take their friends in and take them to screenings and really create this Comic-Con-esque experience, you know, around the film, which will be awesome. But for me, it literally was making sure we had things in the film that catered to all of us as fans, which I think it does. I think the movie talks to every single one of us as geeks. And there's somebody in that film, there's some story, there's some moment that all of us go, ah, That's me.
Morgan, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Comic-Con, Episode 4 of Fans Hope, opened in L.A. on April 5th and will be opening in New York, Philadelphia, and Boston on the 13th. It also has tour dates around the country with Morgan Spurlock appearing. And on top of all of that, it's available on demand, too. You can get the info over at the official website. We've got the link for that over at MightyMoviePodcast.com. We've also got the trailer there as well. And you want to write me? Send that email to Dan at MightyMoviePodcast.com. And next week, we're going to shift gears and be talking with Philippe Falardeau, the director of the sensitive Oscar-nominated Canadian drama Monsieur Lazare. Getting real for once. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This has been a production of Upstart Company NYC. Copyright 2012. Dan Persons. All rights reserved. No unauthorized duplication permitted.